Can we get questions now before Philippine? I think it would be useful. I would like to ask, well, okay, let's ask other people a question first.
I have one question about the commerce, which I raised before. If you get a specific translocation in many patients, which all have chronic myeloid leukemia, why cannot you get the same translocation in several cells at the same time, in several compartments of the hematopoietic system?
I'm not sure I understood the question.
That is, you get a specific chromosomal change in with a Philadelphia chromosome, a translocation between two specific chromosomes, which happens in many instances in many patients. The question is now, why cannot the same specific change happen in the same patients in different compartments of the hematopoietic system?
There are two things. One of them, and I may be misinterpreting your question, the Philadelphia chromosome is present in all three compartments when present. Now, it seems perfectly obvious to me that when you talk about it, let's make the assumption for the moment that transcriptase is really a virus, and not just the footprints, we're really talking about a virus. Obviously, this virus can affect, a virus can affect DNA in a number of ways, but the numbers of types of leukemia you have are very restricted, which leads me to think that most of the effects of these types of viruses are lethal, or that the immunologic surveillance system picks them up and knocks them out for one reason or another, maybe membrane changes. So that the reason that you get chronic myelocytic leukemia or acute myelocytic leukemia or acute lymphocytic leukemia happens to be either the species of virus that hits a certain DNA molecule in a certain way, or it's the same species that hits in random. And as most of them being lethal and only a few of them can come out, and the Philadelphia chromosome is one that can come out. You know, it's an oddity, it's kept people in business for a long time. It probably doesn't have anything to do with the leukemogenesis. It's just one of those markers that you have.
I would say it's just different. Let's say the other hypothesis that a virus is involved is going into the cell at the same place into the DNA and is breaking the same chromosome all the time. So you get the change in all different compartments of the hematopoietic tissue.
I think that's a perfectly plausible alternative possibility.
And most particularly, since your comments are limited to CML, you said AML was also, in your opinion, a stem cell disease, but the argument for it in CML is the marker chromosome, yet you don't have that in ALL or AML.
I said, all right, you have CML without Philadelphia chromosome too, okay?
Yeah, well, I didn't mean that, but I mean you don't, where there are marker chromosomes in AML or ALL, you don't usually see them in all three cell lines, okay?
But you do see abnormalities in all three cell lines.
Sometimes, I don't think
morphologic all abnormalities.
All the time?
Violently, all the time.
Like most of the time?
Depends on how soon you see them. I think the other area that you ought to be looking at, Bob, are free leukemias.
How can we get tissue and free leukemia?
Well, you can't get 10 to the 9 cells. Again, you've got to get this in some sort of a micro tool.
Hey, Fred, I have a couple of other points. I'm not sure we necessarily need to be pessimistic. We can't get stem cells in order to look for certain molecules, information, virus components, because if the myeloblast is directly derived from a stem cell, there's no a priori reason to believe what was present in its immediate progenitor wouldn't be present in the daughter cell.
Well, I think if you're looking at that later stage, you're right. What I'm saying, if you're really blue skying, as I was, and you're looking at it in a predictive sense, namely, you, at this moment, now have normal differentiation. You have normal myeloblasts. And there are some stem cells there. Say a patient in remission that are leukemogenic. Could you pick those stem cells up?
No.
Isn't AML or ALL in your mind just as compatible mechanistically, not with a stem cell disease, but with a simple block and differentiation at the level of the myeloblast or subsequently thereafter? Wouldn't that do exactly the same physiological end result? Wouldn't it be an alternative to your proposal?
Well, you can take variety. Take progranulocytic leukemia and say it's a block at the progranulocyte. Or AML is a block at the myeloblastic level. However, the CFC, the colonies don't form properly in this particular thing, which would put it back a step
further. But also, you said the other day that neither does the colonies form properly on agar derived from myeloblasts form properly.
The colonies on agar derived from the committed stem cell.
Yeah, but you see, the first that you recognize is myeloblasts, and they don't go from myeloblast to granulocyte normally. You said that yesterday.
That's right.
I'm getting confused by this.
Okay. What he's saying is, I'm saying that acute myelocytic leukemia is basically a stem cell disease.
Right.
Let me stop there. Wait a minute. What I want to ask you is, if it's a disease of the stem cells, you say that in fact the disease is not that the stem cells replicate too rapidly, but their daughters stick around too long. Is that correct?
No, that's what I'm saying.
I said there's two
ways. But he also said the same.
There are two ways you could look at it. That the pluripotent stem cell is perfectly normal, what Dr. Gallo said. And that at the myeloblast stage, you got a block in differentiation. And even though the turnover rate is too slow, because there's no decreased death function or differentiation function, they stay around too long, and they expand, right. The other way to look at it is that this may pertain, but the basic effect is in the stem cell.
The precursor
to it. Now the other defect is that they grow where they don't normally grow. They move where they don't normally move, myeloblasts. But they do move where stem cells don't.
There's one problem with that hypothesis, but I don't understand then about that. If it's in the pluripotent stem cell, how come all the differentiated cell lines don't show these abnormal properties?
Very good question. In CML, they do. In AML, they may. And very frequently in AML, there are not enough of them there to say.
But very frequently in AML, there's absolutely no evidence for it at all.
Right.
But I would like to know the point. If one assumes that that the myeloblasts are lacking a factor for further differentiation, then that implicates that the normal myeloblast, the not leukemic one, has a factor. That again means that the normal cell should be dominant on the disease cell. Now, has somebody tried to make a fusion between leukemic myeloblasts, normal stem cells, or normal myeloblasts?
What?
A cell fusion. I mean, if the hypothesis is true, the normal cell should be able to cure the cancer cell.
Well, if you get rid of the cancer cell, the normal cell will grow all right.
Well, anyway, many people have had normal bone marrow and normal cells infused in them, and they don't get cured. And people believe that in vivo some cells fuse, at least they may. That may be an argument against it.
I don't know.
But also, the growth of the cells where they shouldn't, in AML, that too is compatible, I think you said that and we would agree, with a block in differentiation where, as an alternative to a progenitor that you can't recognize proliferating too much, that is, a too proliferative stem cell which gives rise to too many myeloblasts in places they normally shouldn't be. I would look at it this way, normal granulocytes normally metastasize. They go all over the body, they locate where you cut yourself and get infected. They metastasize just like a cancer cell, but they know how to end and die.
Normal granulocytes don't have the potential to replicate.
That's right. That's the difference.
Normal myelocytes, stay where they're supposed to be, namely the bone marrow. Abnormal myeloblasts are seen elsewhere. Now, it may be the abnormal myeloblast goes there and divides, replicates, and so forth. It may be the abnormal stem cell went there and did it. I don't think we can resolve
it. Yeah, both of you, it really makes much more sense. I mean, one can surely view this as saying that the cells feel as if they were myelocytes, right? And they go out and they look for bacteria, they look for cell damage, they try and eat things up, but unfortunately, they're toothless. And the result is that they stick around there, and they also have the capacity still to replicate.
I mean, there's one other point. The argument about CML with the common chromosome being in the three lines was
His argument is that the normal fate of a granulocyte is to be released from the bone marrow and to go into the peripheral blood, to go from the peripheral blood in sites of infection. This cell does not have the capacity to divide. It doesn't have the capacity. It's an end-stage cell. Just as the red cell's normal fate is, after extruded its nucleus, it goes into the peripheral blood and circulates, provides oxygen. Now,
And dies off,
depending upon species, at anywhere from 30 days to 10 years. But the myeloblast doesn't normally go into the peripheral blood. The myelocyte doesn't normally go into the peripheral blood. Now, there is some thought that the reason it doesn't go into the peripheral blood is that it has certain membrane characteristics, namely stickiness and a lack of deformability, that prevent it from going into the peripheral blood. And part of the maturation stage is to develop this deformability, lose the stickiness, and it can now get into the peripheral blood. Now, to say that this myeloblast thinks it's a granulocyte, it has to have an abnormal either bone marrow architecture, or it has to have an abnormal membrane to permit it to go there, and it has to interact with the environment in a different fashion than you normally do. If you inject myeloblasts in the peripheral blood, or stem cells in the peripheral blood, the only place they'll grow is in the bone marrow or in the mouse and in the spleen.
So how about in tuberculosis? Can't you get myeloblasts coming out?
Well, can I stop only one moment to discussion, only for a moment. We get this discussion there on the typewriter, and we didn't know the name of the speakers. Can we arrange it so that you say Gallo, and then you to start, and
it's okay. It's all the first was Ostertag, and then with me, and then with Tim Hunt.
That we can arrange, but up to now we say the name Gallo or Hunt or so, and then we know who it is.
Okay,
thank you.
How about in tuberculosis or other like diseases where you put out immature cells, including myeloblasts?
In what Dr. Gallo is referring to is the leukemoid reaction, which one occasionally sees in tuberculosis. And usually what this means is that immature cells are put into the peripheral blood. Myeloblasts are very, very infrequent in these situations. And the point is they don't grow. Usually they're metamyelocytes, occasional myelocytes.
One last point. You said, you made a point that regulation was seen in leukemia, but you specified chronic myeloblastic leukemia, the same one that you have the common chromosomal abnormality for the three lines. It's limited to some stages of chronic myelocytic leukemia. Therefore, by implication, that means you don't believe it's present in acute myeloblastic or acute lymphoblastic leukemia. That means going from a myeloblast or a lymphoblast to a mature cell, granulocyte and lymphocyte respectively, you believe that there's not proper regulation, which is, I think, compatible with a differentiation block.
I don't want you to put words in my mouth, Bob.
Okay.
In chronic myelocytic leukemia, there is some evidence of normal regulation. And then something happens, they go into a blast cell crisis. Now, didn't make myself clear, as our leader would say, I want to make myself perfectly clear, that I think acute myelocytic leukemia is basically a failure to differentiate. What you and I are arguing about is the failure primarily involved at the stem cell level or at the myeloblast level. Okay? Dr. McCaffrey.
This was part of honesty, and that is 1.2. We must do it. If you start your question, then you give up your aim, and then he can come there. It's a little bit difficult to get it. It's okay. If you say Hardesty, we get it, and no, we stop there.
Hardesty. I would like to ask the question of either one of you, Gallo or Stolman, about with respect to what happens in when you have a remission. All these cancer cells that are produced, is it a release of the block? Do they go ahead and die, or do they go ahead and differentiate? What happens when a patient goes into remission? It seems like this is a pertinent question with respect to whether it's a specific block or whether it's something way back.
Well, do you want me to answer that? I'll give you my thought on it, okay? I think that normally you have what I've been referring to as a pluripotent stem cell compartment. And for purposes of conversation, it's very easy to consider this as a homogeneous uniform compartment. It, however, is probably not, and there are probably degrees of stemness within this compartment. And one might suggest, as has been suggested, that the pluripotent stem cell has a finite limit on the extent of its replication. And you have more immature stem cells that will follow on, and you'll have what they call clonal succession. Now, if you have a patient who has a leukemic clone go out, and if you treat them with chemotherapeutic agents and induce a remission, then what is happening is that a normal stem cell line then differentiates out, and your remission will last as long as you continue to have normal stem cells differentiate out. Now, the relapse comes when either the succeeding clone is leukemic, or maybe you've transferred some bad information into your normal cells. But the presumption is, if you have the capacity for remission, then you have the capacity, then you have normal stem cells present.
But what happens? It's again Hardesty.
Hardesty, what happens? You haven't answered the question, really. What happens to this, in the case of the friend cells in mice, for instance? The spleens are just literally engorged. Just the animal is overwhelmed with cells. In a case of if there's a remission in this kind of a situation, do these cells go on and differentiate, or do they die?
We haven't seen a case of friend cell leukemia in our clinic yet. I don't know about friend cell leukemia. In the acute myeloid leukemia in man, you kill the cells. You know, you can take a patient with progranulin acidic leukemia and give them donomycin and almost wipe out all the cells like this. But you usually go through an aplastic phase, and then they recover, and they recover from a normal pluripotent stem cell. Dr. McCaffrey?
They are Fuchsschneider.
Okay.
Well, it's a very naive question, but I again would like to learn, what is the difference between a chronic and acute leukemia? I mean, in cellular terms, or in what terms you ever like? Have you less cells which grow not as fast as in the acute form?
I'm trying to be facetious and say I find the difference between you and Jeffrey. You look different. Chronic myelocytic leukemia is a disease in which you have a myeloid hyperplasia of the bone marrow. You have an enlarged spleen. You have an increase in myeloid cells in the peripheral blood. It may be associated with anemia, polycythemia, thrombocytosis, or thrombocytopenia. Classically, they have an abnormal chromosome, which is called a Philadelphia chromosome, and they have a decrease in leukocyte alkaline phosphatase. Acute myelocytic leukemia of a classical variety in young people is associated with a large increase in the number of myoblasts in the peripheral, in the bone marrow, may also have it in the peripheral blood, without the differentiation that you see normally or in chronic myelocytic leukemia. You see anemia and thrombocytopenia and so on. And there may be extramedullary sites of growth of the leukemic cells. It could be in the lungs, the heart, the brain, anywhere, in the skin. So they're quite different as you look at them. And the chronic myelocytic leukemia then at some point develops this blast cell crisis. I think this would be an interesting study. Go ahead, Ron.
I want to refer to your slide.
McCaffrey.
McCaffrey, okay.
I wanted to refer to your slide on the stimulation of the stem cell by the pertussis antigen. And I was wondering, first of all, if these animals develop pertussis antibodies or if this is a cell-mediated antigen stimulation. And if it is a cell-mediated stimulation, that suggests that the cell that's being stimulated is a thymic cell, and suggests that that stem cells are T lymphocytes of some variety. I'm asking a question. What do you think about the cell that's being stimulated to proliferate by pertussis antigen? I mean, this sounds very much like the kind of proliferation that a circulating T cell undergoes when it comes in contact with an antigen for which it's been primed.
Okay. You give the pertussis, and I don't know if we get that slide back. All of these events occur within, can you, the events occur, begin to be seen within 12 to 24 hours. So I didn't measure antibody, but I wouldn't presume there's any antibody present that early on.
You get this period.
Oh, it's very fine.
Do you get the same thing with endotoxin, bacterial endotoxin, you know, salmonella?
We haven't followed it that closely, but you do, and you don't get this extent of change. McCulloch's followed it for the first 24 hours, I guess, didn't he? But you do get some changes, not of this magnitude.
Well, McCaffrey, don't you think the overwhelming...
Don't
you think the overwhelming suspicion should be that you're dealing with T lymphocytes?
Stem cell is a cell which, under the light microscope, looks like a small lymphocyte.
Well, you
I don't know that it has been classified in a T or B.
But here we have an instance of it behaving like a T cell.
All right.
So the place to look for your stem cells and your stem cell leukemia may be in the thymus.
Pardon me?
There is thymus left
in
there. There's about 50 grams of thymus in an adult.
The biggest problem is the
nude mouse is here. We're going to discuss with
Dr. Thurman. Yeah, the nude mouse, Ron, has hemophoresis and asthma.
If didn't, there wouldn't be a nude mouse.
That's right. Okay. Here are the time relations. Goes down, it goes in a cycle within 12 hours, 24 hours.
Well, it's sort of interesting, let's make another point, that in all of the animal leukemias, the leukemia, the viral, the RNA tumor virus-induced leukemias, with the exception of one in mice, the leukemia always begins in the thymus, before it's seen anywhere else.
Are you talking about myeloid or lymphoid?
Talking about lymphoid.
Okay. I'm just confining my remarks to myeloblasts.
This is a wild statement about the tumor virus situation in mice, that the thymus is always involved.
I have a comment.
If we consider leukemia is a disease of defect differentiation, and if we consider CSF is a factor which requires maturation or differentiation, then we have to consider two disease can obtain by defect in the cell, and also the defect at the factor. And the data case is important if we want to use this factor as a therapy purpose.
I think the point you raised is a good one, Alan, but this, what Dr. Wu has said is that, I think the leukemia is a defective differentiation as a result of which these cells all stay in the childbearing age group. But if there are three possibilities, if CSF is a regulatory hormone, and there is no convincing evidence yet, it's all inferential, you could have a defective production of CSF, a molecularly abnormal species of CSF, as the basic problem. Then if you gave CSF, you should get correction of the leukemia. The data that I've seen so far makes this unlikely. The second thing is that you could have an abnormal cell, that normal CSF can't direct differentiation, that this abnormal information derives from one of Dr. Gallo, Spiegelman, Baltimore et al.'s abnormal transcriptases or from an unclean white bird or what have you, then you wouldn't expect the CSF to be affected. And this, I think, is a more likely explanation.
Can I ask you a question which relates to an earlier question I asked, which is that if these things are caused by viruses, do you say that the virus infects and is present in the genome of the pluripotent stem cell? And again, if that is so, why does it only affect one cell line? What's your explanation for that?
I was going to plan to try start my talk with some concept that relates to your question. But the real answer to your question is that I would rather not try to answer it because I don't think I don't think I can make a very reasonable, even speculation to answer it.
Okay, Hunt again. Have you ever tried looking in these leukemic patients in the other cell types for the presence of virus particles or viral genomes in the DNA? And what are the answers?
The answer to that is no, we have not. And maybe I can make a little speculation. I think it's perfectly possible that some people get infected with virus which carries information. No one has ruled that out, but I don't think infectivity from without is going to be a common mechanism for cancer in man. I think that maybe we'll disagree with Spiegelman, or I'm not sure everybody that works in his laboratory, but I think that it's certainly possible. It happens in animals. I don't think anybody's ruled it out in man. I would suspect that those are going to be isolated incidences, but maybe they're not.
I think you remember this good voice sometimes. It was Gallo. It was for the African, you see.
Yes, thank you. I said I think that sometimes, so the part of your question, we have not looked in other cells. We have not looked to answer that part. About exogenous infection, I think no one has ruled it out. I think it's plausible that it occurs sometimes. I don't think it's likely that it's a common mechanism for neoplasia in man. There may be people who disagree with that, but I just think we just don't know.
Well, actually, unless you get, I hate to use the word, more refined technique, you're not going to be able to get enough megakaryocytes, and probably not enough erythroid precursors to make this measurement.
Yes, but then when they go into remission, we could get lymphocytes, maybe enough. I don't know. We couldn't.
Lymphocyte.
I don't know.
It's probably not related at that point.
You're right. I don't know what cell we do. We need a better micro technique with more certainty. I think that if I can get into your reverse transcriptase part of the end of your talk for a second, the antibody idea is now I think very feasible. We have available antibodies to primate type C virus reverse transcriptase. They cross with the human enzyme, at least some that we've recently isolated. Therefore, we can develop, hopefully, a possibility of looking at small quantities of cells by immunofluorescence. Dr. Gallagher in our laboratory stimulated by, in part, by discussions with Dr. Stoneman, I think plans to make that a major part of his endeavor in the coming year. So I think that experiment is possible to do. Dr. Stoneman mentioned that he would like to know the number of molecules of reverse transcriptase per cell, information like that. So I'd like to ask Dr. Stoneman the number of molecules of CSF per cell. Yeah, that's what you want to know about reverse transcriptase. I want to know about CSF.
I know. I know.
Actually, they're enough to immunofluoresce.
What's the answer? I don't want to know if it's enough, or what's the same?
Well, answer? It's about, I think it's 3,653. Touche.
I think, look, all the comments you made about reverse transcriptase and what you'd like to have, I totally agree with you. I think that if we could determine what cells, how better micro criteria, a proper immunological approach with cells, that this has got to be done and is the future direction. And generally, I think it's a hard talk to follow because despite pulling at Dr. Stoneman's tails, I think that this is perhaps the most informative and perhaps the best talk through this meeting, and not only before, but what's going to occur after. I have two major disagreements with you, though. One is that I think you want the answers a little too fast. I think this is a very hard question, and the first bit of evidence to establish if even there is virus information or related information present in human neoplasia definitively and acceptable to all people is going to take a few years, and it's only been seriously done in the last few years, maybe even in the last year. And the second major disagreement I have with you is your conclusion that you're just a simple clinician. I think that's... Okay.